From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
I am going to take a guess at something. I'm going to guess that you are uncomfortable talking to strangers. Maybe you're a very social person. Maybe you're a total extrovert, or maybe you're an introvert. Either way, I bet that, you know, you feel like you know how to connect with people, but just walking up to a random stranger, how do you do that? Why do you do that? Is it even natural to do that? Is it allowed? It's so weird, and it's just not something we do, pandemic aside. Well, here's an interesting thing. There are a lot of reasons to do this, a lot of powerful reasons, a lot of ways to improve your life and your business by being really good at talking to strangers. And it doesn't matter if it comes naturally to you or not, because it is something you can learn. And here's a guy who can teach you that.
My name is Joe Cohane. I'm a journalist in New York, and I'm the author of a new book called The Power of Strangers, The Benefits of Connecting in a Suspicious World.
Long-time listeners, and I mean long-time listeners of Problem Solvers, will recognize Joe's voice because Joe had hosted a number of episodes of this show many years ago when he was executive editor at Entrepreneur Magazine. Joe and I are old friends. We've worked together at a number of publications. And years ago, Joe had this idea, or really this realization about something he wasn't doing that he felt he should be doing more of.
I started to wonder at a certain point why I was not talking to strangers. And then I realized when I did, it felt really good. So I really went down the rabbit hole. I started digging into psychological research, sociological research. I started talking to as many people as I could in an effort to kind of puzzle together what keeps us from doing this, but also when will we talk to strangers and what happens when we do. And it turns out that it's amazingly beneficial both for you and for society to get into the habit of talking to people you don't know on a regular basis.
And it goes without saying that, of course, you can't build a business unless you connect with strangers in some way. You can't build a network unless you can walk into a room and just start talking to people. So how do you do it? Well, that is what Joe spent absolute years trying to figure out. Flew around the world, took classes in this, put himself in uncomfortable situations, talked to everybody, as you just heard. And on this episode of Problem Solvers, we are going to dig into what he learned that is specific to helping entrepreneurs like you. Because, of course, we want to connect. You want to connect. So how do you do it? How do you get to the point where you can just walk up to anybody and start a conversation and be happy about it? Have the other person be happy about it. It's possible. It really is. You don't have to be afraid of strangers. And Joe will explain why coming up after the break. AT&T Business manages your network. And today, as business relies on fast digital connections, managing your network is even more important than ever. What does it mean to have a trusted provider managing your network? Let's say your staff needs remote access to client data. AT&T Business gives you enterprise-grade mobility solutions that connect you to your most important data when you're on the move, no matter the size of your company. And fiber connectivity from AT&T Business empowers your business's network solutions with reliable, symmetrical connections. That's a huge deal because although you'll hear many carriers claim to offer fast download speeds, they have slow upload speeds, and you cannot run a business with slow uploading. Upload matters for today's data-intensive sharing, whether you're passing over that large client file or building an AR/VR experience. To learn more about how AT&T Business can help keep your business going, visit att.com/solvers. Limited availability, available in select areas only. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. All right, we're back. So on this episode, like I said, we are talking with Joe Cohane. He is the author of a new book called The Power of Strangers, The Benefits of Connecting in a Suspicious World. And this book, I just cannot recommend this thing more strongly. It is so totally fascinating and also really instructive and empowering. So check it out, The Power of Strangers. But on this episode, I wanted to dig in with Joe on specifically how to think about strangers from the point of view of an entrepreneur, because Joe has that background. He was executive editor of Entrepreneur Magazine for years and talked to so many of them and saw how powerful and how challenging the concept of strangers can be. So to start, I asked him what he observed as he was spending time talking with entrepreneurs about this.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, I loved talking to entrepreneurs anyways, because they're all so interesting, so smart, so quirky, so driven, almost to the point where they're like possessed that they can get this thing done. And I love that passion. Again and again and again, when I had conversations with these people, especially when they started talking about their early days, I would hear that they were introverted, that they were uncomfortable talking to strangers, and that they really had to force themselves to do it. I actually spoke to a woman who is a construction superintendent in Massachusetts last week, in fact, who was saying that it was a watershed moment for her when her father, who was a plumber, started forcing her to order the pizza over the phone when she was a kid. Would basically say like, okay, call the pizza guy and have a conversation about what we're going to eat with this pizza guy on the phone in person, because she was really shy. And she credited that to part of her success running enormously complicated construction projects where you're dealing with so many different types of people, different personalities, different backgrounds, all this stuff. She credits that as the beginning of her effort to become really socially fluid and really socially adept in a way that talks in a way that allows her to connect with strangers and people that she works with. But I heard that time and time again, and I heard time and time again that it was a big moment for people when they were just like, I have to do this. This is not an option. It's not an option for me to be absolutely rigid with fear over the prospect of talking to strangers. Business is at its core social, and therefore social skills are going to be great business. So it seems like for many people, this is going to be a key skill. You have to do it. You have to learn how to do this.
Yeah. And what you just said there is really important. And what I wanted to jump off of, which was you can learn how to do this. There are actual tactics that can make you better at this.
Yeah, there's a lot that you can do. I mean, the big thing, the big message that I want to get across to people who are uncomfortable with this, and we can talk a little bit about what the impediments are, what keeps us from doing this, is that we are social creatures, right? So talking to strangers, the cynical view is that we're somehow super tribal or we're super xenophobic or that it's unnatural for us to be surrounded by strangers, when in fact, a lot of researchers have argued and historians have argued that the ability to talk to strangers and coordinate with strangers and cooperate with strangers is like the cornerstone of human civilization, right? It's a big thing. Once we got to the point where we could really find ways to become comfortable talking to other people, that opened the way for cooperation on a mammoth scale that would have beggared the imaginations of our hunter-gatherer ancestors who lived in groups of 24 people. It is natural. It will come to you naturally. We are wired for connection to a certain degree. Now, there are a lot of things that conspire against us making these sorts of connections, but the capacity is there. It's there for extroverted people, certainly, but it's also there for introverted people. It's there for people who might consider themselves shy. There's a big wall there of anxiety that needs to be overcome in order to do it. And I talked to so many people who repeated this again and again and again. Once you start trying, you will find that it's incredibly natural in a way that you absolutely did not expect.
What do you think is the first crack in the wall that people come up? How do you start to chip away at this? Because I think, for example, one of the big chips in the wall of imposter syndrome, for example, is, and the reason you'll understand why I bring this up in a second, is because one of the big chips in that wall is realizing that everybody feels it. And once you know that, and you know that you're not alone in it, you can make the logical leap that the other people you're encountering probably have experienced it as well. And therefore, what you're carrying around isn't all that scary or unique. And I wonder if there's a similar way to start thinking about talking to strangers, which is that if you're uncomfortable with it, know that other people are uncomfortable with it too. And therefore, you're not alone in being like the weird person who doesn't know how to communicate.
Right. It's not you. It's a very common thing. And it was common for me. And I'm a fairly extroverted person. I'm good when I'm around people I know. But the prospect of walking up to someone cold and starting a conversation was very difficult for me. And I had to learn how to do it. You know, the message that I would like to get across to people is that, yes, it's very common to be anxious about these sorts of interactions. And the fears are, there are a lot of fears. One of them is rejection. So a lot of fear, and a lot of people who have researched this, particularly psychologists, have collected a lot of data on what keeps people from doing this. Fear of rejection is an enormous impediment to talking to strangers. Everybody seems to believe that if you just go and chat with someone, they're going to reject you. They're going to think you're nuts. They're going to think there's something wrong with you. They're going to think you're after something, you're selling something, or this is some kind of weird media play or something like that. There's a whole lot of fear of rejection out there with people. What people need to understand is that it's largely baseless. There was a great series of experiments done by a psychologist named Nicholas Epley, who had people go out in Chicago and London and just chat with strangers on the tube, on the subway, on the CTA, buses and taxis all over the place. Before he sent them out, he asked them how they expected this to go. And every single person was like, this is a nightmare. I don't want to do this. People are going to hate my guts. This is going to go very badly. What he discovered, even in London, which is considered to be socially like kind of cold, kind of brusque, you know, not so different from New York or Boston, which you and I both have experience with, is that no one was rejected. Not one out of hundreds of people that out. And these were not trained people. These are commuters and students of all ages. Everyone who went out and made an effort to chat with people on mass transit, which is the biggest taboo of all, you know, we do not talk to each other on the subway. No one was rejected. Everyone had a conversation. And not only that, the conversation went on significantly longer than they thought it was going to go on. It was more fun than they thought. They enjoyed their commutes more than they thought. The other people were more interesting than they expected them to be. And the other people seemed to be interested in them. So this is, and again, this isn't just a fluke thing. We've seen this replicated in a number of surveys that people's fear of rejection tends to be baseless, right? I mean, this is not 100% everywhere. You could live in a place where there's a lot of conflict. You know, this is not entirely, but for the studies that have been conducted on this, there's no meaningful I think that the line that Epley used was, there's no meaningful chance of rejection. So let that line ring through your head as you set out into the world to try to do this. There is no meaningful chance for rejection. It might not go great the first time. You do have to get the swing of it a little bit. It requires like a lot of energy and a lot of attention to like engage with someone you don't know. But that fear, it's universal and it's borderline baseless. You don't really have to worry about failure if you go into this in the right spirit, which is curiosity, kindness, friendliness, that sort of thing. The other big fear was just that people don't know how to do it. And this sort of circles back to my previous point. There's a psychologist named Jillian Sandstrom who was an introvert who discovered that it felt really good to be talking to strangers and interacting with strangers. She started wondering why. She's since become like the leading researcher on this stuff now. And she started holding events where she would get strangers to talk to each other just to collect data on what keeps them from doing it. And the number one impediment that she saw, and she saw it from everybody, was everybody was worried they didn't know how to do it. They didn't know how to start. They worried the person would think they were boring or strange or insane or all these things, you know, that are tied to fear of rejection. They wouldn't know how to end the conversation without it being awkward or seeming insulting. The English, this is the most English thing I've ever heard in my life. They worried that once they started talking, they would say too much. It would get too personal. They would disclose too many personal things. And then once that stuff gets out there, man, it's all over. Yeah. But the cool right. thing about this is, you know, Jillian's done a lot of research on this too, is once they start, they find it easy. It's a theme that runs through the book. It was certainly my experience. It happens again and again and again. And the reason why it's easier than we expect it to be is because we are social animals. If we didn't have some faculty to connect with strangers, then civilization just would not have happened. We would have still been living in the veldt with small groups of people. But we have this capacity to do this. We have to get past our anxiety. We have to get around some norms concerning it. But you will find when you start doing it that it's completely natural. It feels surprisingly natural. And the reason why it feels natural is because it is natural. It's part of who we are as a species.
We have the natural capacity, sure, but of course that doesn't mean that we all naturally know how to do it. So how do you actually learn to talk to strangers? Joe got on a plane and he flew to London and he took a course with an expert to find out. And his lessons from that experience coming up after the break. As a founder or business owner, you know what it's like to run your entire business from your inbox. Between the sales, recruiting, and fundraising emails, things can get messy. And Streak is the solution to that. Streak is a CRM designed to help you stay on top of each part of your process and your inbox without ever leaving Gmail. Streak gives you tools for email tracking, mail merges, and snippets to save time and scale up your email efficiency. In just a few minutes, you can also set up pipelines right inside your inbox to start tracking your contacts and emails through each process. Streak helps you collaborate by sharing emails and pipelines with your team members, whether you work in an office, out in the field, or on a remote team. And everything is customizable. Sign up for Streak today at streak.com/problem solvers and get 20% off your first year of their pro plan, the most popular option. That is streak.com/problem solvers for 20% off their pro plan. streak.com/problem solvers. All right, let's get back to the conversation with Joe Cohane, author of the book, The Power of Strangers. Like I said, Joe had flown to London to take a class on how to do this and took away a lot of lessons. And the first one I wanted to ask him about was the one that I found just most fascinating and shocking, which is that small talk, as much as we hate it, actually has a really valuable purpose.
Yeah, I love this stuff. There's an English social anthropologist named Kate Fox, who's done a lot of work on this. And she was interested in a characteristic of the English that everyone always makes fun of, which is they seem to have an inexhaustible desire to talk about the weather. No, everyone talks about the weather, right? And, you know, the weather's interesting in England. It's more interesting than the weather in, like, Los Angeles, but it comes up all the time. And so some people look at that as, like, the mark of an unimaginative or uninspired people, which we know the English are not. And so Kate Fox started looking into this, and she was like, well, what's the function? Is this just a boring people with nothing to say, or is there something else going on here? And what she found was that small talk isn't the intended end. Small talk is a way to establish mutually that you're both people, you're both capable of interacting, no one is a threat, and that you have something in common. So it's raining, you have something in common. And that little commonality creates a that opens the way for better conversation. A lot of people feel a lot of anxiety about starting these conversations, and they worry that they won't have anything in common. And people do require, like, some kind of commonality in order to really start talking. But it's pretty ridiculous what counts as a commonality. You know, if the rain is the thing, you're like, well, I don't know this person, but it's raining, and it's raining on her, and it's raining on me. Like, we have something in common. We're getting rained on. It really doesn't take that much. It just takes a tiny little bit to signal to one another that you're in this together and that you can communicate, right? That you're not a threat. You're not dangerous. The problem arises when people just don't stop talking about the weather, right? So if you're like, so yeah, it rained yesterday too. Like, yep, like that's just death, right? That's conversational death. It's soul death if you're exposed to that sort of thing enough times. And a lot of people get stuck there. And the reason why people hate small talk is because they don't understand what it is. It's not a conversation. It's a window to a better conversation. It's a way of establishing that you're in the room with the person, that you're reasonable, that you're noticing the same things they're noticing. And from there, you can have a conversation. You know, if you say, like, oh, rainy day today, it's like, yeah, you can say that your plans got canceled and maybe they're interested in that. And then they ask a question and then you're off to the races. But that's the big thing. Like, understanding what small talk is for and then getting past it as quickly as possible is the name of the game if this is going to be the way that you initiate a conversation.
Do you think that one person can do that? So I was thinking about when I've gotten stuck in small talk conversations that never leave small talk. And now you're expanding the range of weather commentary. Is that because neither side is really trying to find a way out? Somebody has to hook onto something else or offer something else that'll give you a pathway out of this.
Yeah, it's a funny kind of mutual misunderstanding where we tend to assume, because we hate small talk, that if someone else starts making small talk with us, that's all they're capable of. And so we check out, and then we just start making mindless small talk back. And then you go into this doom loop that just occupies 5 minutes of your life that you never get back. Somebody's going to take the lead. It's a dance. And especially when it becomes habit, which it is for all of us, I think. If you're the person reading this book, if you're the person who's trying to make these connections, you can take the lead. You can notice something about the person. You can, you know, if they say something about their day, you can kind of ask an open-ended question like, well, why was that, you know, what were you going to do today? Or like, what was the plan for today? That sort of thing. Just like really general questions that allow them to get out of that kind of autopilot mode and offer something personal about themselves, something that gives an indication of what their day is or who they are. And then you can just go from there. So interestingly, you know, I found this a lot too. The key to talking to strangers, if you're the person initiating it, is not talking. There's this great organization called Urban Confessional that just literally sticks people on street corners with signs saying free listening and offer themselves up to anyone who wants to tell them anything. And I did it, and it was like fine, but amazing once you got used to it. The guy who runs that organization advocates for something called the 80-20 rule, which is when you're having a conversation, when you're listening to someone in this context, only talk about yourself 20% of the time. So what's this do? When you're listening, it's obvious. You're not going to bulldoze in the middle of a conversation. But if you're in a context where you're engaging in small talk, if you ask questions, if you listen attentively to what people are saying, if you're trying to find something that you can kind of seize onto that will lead you to a better conversation, the person is going to feel that you're paying attention to them. They're going to feel flattered because no one ever pays anyone. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty rare that you find yourself in a situation where someone who's not a family member is paying attention to you. And even then, that probably doesn't happen that much in families either. But they're flattered, right? And they're like, oh, this person's interested in me. They're asking questions. And that studies have shown that that makes them like you a little bit more and trust you a little bit more and feel a little bit more comfortable in your company, which makes them disclose more and talk about themselves a little bit more. When they talk about themselves a little bit more, you get information, you get data. And then once that starts coming out, you can say, well, okay, well, we have something and know someone. We both play softball, like whatever it is, something will come out. And because the way we're wired is social species, we really are wired to seek those things out. I mean, we encounter this all the time at networking events or parties. Like, you'll have a conversation with someone and you like them. You have like a decent vibe going. You will, without question, find something that you have in common. And honestly, it usually takes like a minute. It doesn't take that long. We're very, yeah. very good at finding those things. We're like pigs after truffles, you know? because when we make connections, it's good for us. It builds our social networks. For entrepreneurs, it builds our business networks. And as humans, it allows us to connect with other humans, which is like our food. We really need to do that.
Let's dig into one other element of this, which is questions. I mean, you talked about questions quite a lot, but when I read your book, I was surprised at how nuanced question asking can get and how you, describing your own experience, but I'm sure I've done the exact same thing because we both have journalism backgrounds. We're good at asking questions. We're good at digging into things, but digging into things with people often actually has the opposite of the intended effect, which is that it can make them uncomfortable. So there's a balance that you have to strike in how to ask questions of people. Can you talk about that more?
Yeah. You mentioned this class I took in London. Part of it was we were supposed to listen. We were supposed to learn to listen. So we would be partnered with another student and they would tell us something and we were supposed to ask questions. So a good question, and there's pretty much consensus on this, especially at the beginning of a conversation, is an open-ended question. So it's who, what, where, when. Why, right? They don't put anything on the person you're talking to. It's not you rooting around for something that you're specifically interested in. It's allowing them the chance to express themselves, to say what they're thinking, to say what they like in themselves. When I was in this exercise, my partner said something that I thought was interesting, and I seized on it and leaned forward and proceeded to sort of grill her until I got what I wanted. Right. And I got something pretty good, I gotta say. Pat myself on the back. There was something really interesting. It was an interesting insight. But the teacher came over and she was like, okay, so that's fine. And I was pretty pleased with myself. And she was like, but that was an interrogation. Like, yes, you got a piece of information that you were looking for. But what you didn't do is allow the conversation to go somewhere where you weren't expecting it to go. So when you ask open-ended questions, you cede control of the conversation to the other person. You're not in control. You're not steering it. You're allowing them to surprise you. And it's super stressful for people. And it's stressful for me as a journalist to do that, to not just go like try to ferret something out, to be like, man, why do you think that way? And then you also have to pay attention because you never know where it's going to go. You have to be really engaged. You have to watch body language. You have to listen to tone of voice. And you have to follow their lead, which is, again, really difficult for me. And I'm sort of a loudmouth and I work in the business I work in. It was very hard for me to just hang back and just let it go. So those general open-ended questions are the way to do that. So you ask those questions like, who, why, what, where, basic journalism questions, and then just pay attention and just listen to what they're saying as they say it. A really advanced technique is to help them, by the quality of your listening, help them better articulate what they think or feel. And this is actually a pretty profound thing too. We're not particularly, as a verbal species, we're not particularly good at clearly articulating our feelings. Like, language is a crude, kind of a crude thing. So when someone is sitting with you and you just say, this thing pissed me off, and that person's like, yeah, that pissed me off too. I have this other thing that pissed me off. And then you're just not talking to each other. But if someone says like, why, like, when did it start? When did it start pissing you off? Does it, you know, how do you deal with it being pissing you off? That sort of thing. Then it puts me in a space where I can really think about it. I can think about my answer because I don't feel like I'm being attacked. I don't feel like I'm being grilled. I can sit there with this person who seems to be interested in me and who poses no real threat that I can tell. And I can think through what I'm saying and I can think out loud. So good listening, high quality listening, can lead the speaker to a clearer understanding of what they think, which is really cool and super valuable for them. And it's also good for you because then you get like a clearer articulation of who this person is. But so much of it is passive. It's like active listening, but the questioning part is like totally passive. You're just letting them go and you're helping them get there.
Joe, in a minute or two, give me, as a final thing, one thing that somebody should do right now to get better at talking to strangers. Is it literally just walk out the door, approach somebody, start talking, learn from it? What's a place to start?
Sure. I mean, the big thing, there's a sociologist named Irving Goffman who said the point of the goal of talking to strangers is to utter something and not disconfirm that you are sane. Be mindful of that when you head out into the streets to try this out. You don't want to do it in a weird place. You don't want to do it in public at night. You don't want to do it where you're like popping up behind someone or surprising someone. Like, don't be a creep. Don't lurk. All these things. I shouldn't have to tell people this, but you do. In daylight, in public, with other people around, mindful of how busy people are. So you can't intercept someone who's like getting off the train because they're trying to get somewhere. But walk around and look for people who might be sitting on a bench in a public place. If you're in a grocery store and the kid behind the cash register is the day is quiet and they're just sitting there. You can just, you know, have a little conversation with the kid behind the cash register. Doing it like that, those are pretty easy. Those are like the training wheels for this. Often, you know, waiters or waitresses, these sorts of things, like just striking up a conversation with people in an open public environment where it won't be perceived as threatening. Over time, you can do more difficult things. I ended up just like chatting up people on the subway, which, as I said, is a big taboo, and it was amazing. I mean, it went incredibly well. It was great. They were great. They were so much fun. But yeah, for starters, you go to a restaurant, talk to the waiter, try to understand who the waiter is, understand what motivates them, understand what they would like to be doing more of. Like that's always a good tip. Huh. Don't ask people what they do, ask them what they would like to do more of. And then you just get comfortable. You get used to listening. You get used to knowing when you should speak and when to speak. And you, the biggest thing is you will be immediately rewarded by the experience.
So go out, do it. I hope you feel more empowered to go talk to someone knowing that they want to talk to you too. Once again, Joe's book is called The Power of Strangers. Cannot recommend it more strongly. Go check it out. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.